It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, and thank you for tuning in to another episode of CPA Review and More. We are pleased to bring you the number one podcast for CPAs and CPA candidates. If you'd like to learn more about how Yeager CPA Review can help you, find us on our website at YeagerCPAReview.com. Now, here's your host, Phil Yeager.
And hello, everyone. This is Phil Yeager, and welcome to my podcast called CPA Review and More. All right. Why CPA Review? Well, I've been doing CPA Review for 42 years. Is that hard to believe? And I'm only 50 years old. Now, you're probably saying, how did you do it? I was a child prodigy in accounting. All right. All my friends went to medical school, became lawyers. And my first words out of my mouth were CPA. So I became a CPA, and actually I was in practice, and I also was in the education area. You know, I taught at various colleges in the Washington, D.C. area. So anyway, the more, for those who have never listened, mean we have subjects other than CPA review. You can only talk about CPA review so much, and we bring on other guests who are in the different areas of accounting, who actually give people a lot of understanding if they want to go into other areas. And please remember, we do these every Tuesday. There's a different segment every Tuesday. So anyway, this is our first show, if you want to call it that, of the new year. It is January 4th. I know this year was a little different from all other years, all right, because we had this virus. Is anybody familiar with this virus? COVID-19, is that what it's called? So anyway, we actually drove down to South Carolina, right? But by the way, my wife bought me for Christmas a new hazmat suit. So there wasn't any problem. No, I'm just kidding. All right, but anyway, it was a different type of year, all right? Because we didn't get together with a lot of relatives because they, you know, they just were afraid to drive or whatever. So anyway, today, oh my, look at who I have on today, all right? I have a gentleman, you know, we actually go from the East Coast to the West Coast, all right, to the South, to the North. And we look for people to be on the show to give you inspiration, to give you knowledge. And I found this person, he was actually on the street, saying, you do a podcast? And I said, yes, we do. And he says, well, I'm a CPA and I want to share some information. And I said, what's your name? And he said, my name, you probably heard of me, my name is Sean Sorry. So I said, why are you sorry to be Sean? So anyway, we went on and on. That was a really bad joke. All right, we'll have to edit that out. Probably not, though. But anyway, we have Sean Sorry, all right? And Sean has a real interesting background. And by the way, he's just not a lower-level accountant. He's a partner at Markham & Company. And if you watch enough television, all right, you'll see that Markham advertises tremendously. They're always advertising. Is that true, Sean?
That is true.
And they have a huge advertising budget. And what are they looking for with the advertising? Getting what type of clients?
Yeah, it's been a big push probably over the last year or so to not only just do some of the more traditional, you know, marketing work that tends to be more ground level, but something broader national that we've done through commercials that have been in a lot of the national news networks. So it's, you know, one of our firm's focuses is not only privately held clients, but also typically smaller publicly traded companies or companies looking to go public. And I think that's just been kind of a fertile ground for us to kind of get our name out there with people that are, you know, looking to kind of make that jump to the next level as a publicly traded company. And, you know, that's been an area where we've been able to get some name recognition.
And Sean graduated a very, very prestigious school. Okay. You know, I didn't go to a prestigious college. All right. I don't know if you ever heard in the past. I went to the Lackawanna School of Accountancy and Cosmetology. So if accountancy drops off, I can do your hair. All right. But Sean is a graduate of Notre Dame. Notre Dame. And by the way, he knows Rudy. I hope you've seen that movie. Great movie. All right. You met him, Sean? You told me?
No, I haven't had a chance to meet him. I've got his autograph on a helmet with a bunch of other folks, but haven't had the chance to meet him yet.
All right. You put a helmet with his name on it?
Yes, I got a couple of years ago for Christmas. I got a helmet signed by, it was Rudy. I got Joe Montana, Brady Quinn, you know, Lou Holtz, you know, you name it from, you know, the last 40 or so years.
Joe Namath.
Morning's on there.
Joe Namath. Is Joe Namath on there?
Joe Namath is not on there.
Oh, you see, I named someone.
Yeah, he was with that other school. I don't want to name
it. Was he goes, yeah, Penn State, that's right. I actually had an interview up at that school.
Really?
But it wasn't the Beaver Falls. I think he went to Beaver Falls campus. All right. This was the main campus at State, what is it, State University? What do they call it?
Happy Valley.
Well, it might be happy there, but it was called Penn State at State College, I think it's called. Anyway, I didn't get the job, right? And that, you know, they could have had someone famous, but, you know, that knows indirectly Rudy Rutabaker, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Sean, it looks like he spent most of his life to date in school. He has more designations, all right, than anybody I've seen. Well, I've seen people with these, but we'll talk about each one of these. And actually, one area, now, were you actually, you wanted these PPP loans, all right? Mm-hmm. Were you involved with that?
Yeah, so I would tell you, personally, I didn't touch the broader push that the firm had, but for the clients that I manage on more of a day-to-day basis, I was involved with all of them and kind of helping go through the process and figure out what to do and, you know, now kind of laying out the game plan for the forgiveness piece.
And would you tell everyone, you said PPP, all right? What does PPP stand for?
Yeah, so it's the yes. What is it? Payroll Protection Plan.
Payroll Protection Plan. Good.
That basically was, you know, government grants for businesses that were impacted by COVID, which is, you know, essentially pretty much everybody. And, you know, for most small to mid-sized companies, they would typically qualify for this PPP program. And it was run through really a loan program. So they get a loan and then it's effectively forgivable. And if they meet certain requirements and, you know, based on how the rules are set up, you know, vast majority of companies are expected to be able to get that money without having to pay it back.
Is it hard? Was it very hard to get these companies forgiven of the debt?
So actually, we've advised a lot of our clients to wait on filing forgiveness applications until this year, because, you know, just in the last week or two, you know, with some of the new legislation that's, you know, being put into place where what was initially a $50,000 kind of a free forgiveness level, if you're below that threshold of loan, you can kind of sign a one-page affidavit and you're done. You know, that's been raised to $150,000. And, you know, at least at this point, it sounds like, you know, there may not be any future changes to that threshold on the horizon. So we're now at the point where we're telling clients, all right, time to start looking into getting the forgiveness application filed. But we didn't want to have people basically kind of throwing good money after bad or good time after bad when they could have, you know, waited a couple of more months and not had to go through the headache and hassle and contortions of filling out some of those forms, because they can be pretty complicated.
Yes, they are. Because, and also, I remember companies telling me that they applied for the loans, okay? And they said the requirements changed just about every day, all right, to get the loan initially, all right? And this is the second round of loan money, is that correct, that they now have?
So, yeah, there's a second round now that a little bit more narrowly defined group of companies will qualify. So rather than kind of the broader base before, Now you have to have suffered a 25% decline in revenue in a given quarter in order to qualify. So certainly plenty of businesses out there that are, you know, still in desperate need of that money, but many companies that got PPP money before that aren't going to qualify this time around.
What type of client, without mentioning names, what type of clients do you have that actually did apply for the PPP? What was their, what business were they in?
Yeah, so a variety. Some in the, one that comes to mind in the rental business, equipment rental, another in consulting, IT consulting, a handful in construction, a few what I'll call distribution or value-added distribution type companies. So, you know, really across the board. You know, I tell you maybe the one that I didn't have that's probably gotten a lot of press is restaurants. Just don't really have many of those in my book. But, you know, really we've seen it across all industries.
Yeah, and the thing was, I don't know, for the people listening, all right, a lot of the problem with the first round was companies who didn't need the money, all right, got large sums of loans, such as I think Ruth Chris was one of those companies, all right? And they got this loan and they don't need the money. And I think they returned it back to the government, if I remember correctly, all right?
That was one of the big concerns was, you know, at first there's a lot of uncertainty and everyone was saying, hey, I'm going to sign up. I'd rather get the money and have to give it back than not get it at all. And like you said, there were certainly some pretty well-known names that got some negative publicity as a result of that. But, you know, I think it did put companies in a little bit of a difficult position to know, well, you know, a month into the pandemic, or at least a month into when it's really affecting most of us, how is that really going to impact us in the long term? And, you know, you don't really know until you get further down the road. And there are some companies that continued to thrive during that time. And there are others that, you know, that were struggling then and are still struggling now.
How has the pandemic affected, the accounting field, the public accounting field? Has it actually probably increased the business, doesn't it?
I would tell you, at least from our experience, you know, we're as busy as ever. I think we just had our largest year ever. You know, I know on our side of the business, on the valuation litigation support side, we've been, you know, running with our hair on fire for the last couple of months here. So I think at first there was a little bit of a dip and a pause as people were trying to figure out what was going on. But, you know, things have kind of been business as usual for the most part. You know, we've been very fortunate to be in an industry and in a position where, you know, the negative impact of the pandemic really hasn't hit us yet. But that's not to say that something may not happen down the road. And, you know, who's to know how things will continue to play out?
Aren't CPAs now considered essential to the economy? Aren't we listed as an essential business?
Yeah, believe it or not.
Does that mean you're going to get your flu shot before I will?
I don't know. Whenever my wife signs me up.
And you see for a whole line of CPAs, you know, and then you got these other line right behind them of 95-year-old people, right, who are not CPAs, all right? And then the CPAs are saying, get away from me, all right? I'm essential. You're not, all right? But anyway, no, it's, actually what that's done, making CPAs essential, I think it's increased the salaries of CPAs. And it also increased, obviously, the need.
It very well may have. Yeah, I wish I had my finger on the pulse more of kind of the, you know, the new hires coming in and you know, what exactly, you know, comp levels are at this point. But it wouldn't surprise me. I mean, I can tell you, we're always looking for good people. And I think every firm is looking for good people. I mean, that's the hardest thing to find at this point. And that
is there a shortage? Are you familiar with all? Do you get involved? I know you said you don't get involved really with that area, the human resource area. But do you hear that there's a shortage of CPAs?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, I think across the board, firms are looking for good people. And I know that there were a number of firms that laid people off as part of the response to the pandemic. You know, knock on wood, we were very fortunate where we didn't have to lay anybody off as a result of, you know, changes in business. But I think it certainly had to have created a wave of influx of, you know, new qualified folks back to the market that, you know, for firms looking to scoop up talent, you know, it's a pretty opportune time.
Did you change your way of doing business where your employees can actually work from home. Do you have that?
Yeah, we do. And you know, we were fairly flexible before, but we did have a period of time where basically everybody was sent home. And, you know, at this point, it's kind of a come as you will sort of approach. You know, you aren't required to be in the office. The offices are officially closed, but if you want to come in or you need to come in for something, you can. So, you know, everyone's, it's still a little bit of a learning experience as far as, you know, when do you need to go in? When do you not need to go in? You know, everybody treats it a little bit differently. Everybody's got a little bit different situation, but certainly the flexibility is very nice.
Have the people, have you found that any employees have taken advantage of that now that you're really not coming to the office?
That's a great question. I would tell you from my experience, no, but I think you'd get a different answer for every person you ask. I think we've just been very lucky. We've got a pretty long-standing team that we work with in our group. You know, we can trust people working from home. It'd be a little bit different story, I think, if you have, you know, newer hires or people that you just don't know as well, and you're trying to build that relationship and that rapport, and you don't have the face-to-face in the office to be able to see, right, you know, what are someone's working habits? What do they need help with? You know, I think that'd be a lot more difficult trying to do that remotely versus the situation that we're in where we kind of know everybody already. It's easy to pick up the phone and say, hey, what's going on? What do you need help with? And, you know, you don't have those hiccups along the way.
When this pandemic is over, who knows when it's going to be over, but all right. Do you see companies like yourselves continuing with this, you know, working at home, or do you think they're going to come back, you know, full time to the office?
That's a really good question. I wish I knew for sure. You know, that's like, you know, the ultimate crystal ball, because I mean, that's whether it's our firm or others, you know, that's a big change in the, you know, commercial real estate market as far as, you know, how much space do people need going forward? I mean, if I have to guess one way or the other, I do think there's going to be a shift in, you know, how people work going forward. I think this accelerated what was already in the works, and that, you know, I think we all realized fairly quickly that, you know, we can be really, really efficient and just as effective at home. I think the bigger concern, maybe in two different areas, one being, you know, just the professional development side of things and not having, you know, the true face-to-face interaction. I mean, it's fantastic to have the video conferencing and still be able to see people, but just being able to spend time together outside of the, you know, the time of getting the work done and focusing on those issues and just kind of the other, you know, relationship things that you build being around folks, you know, being, you know, one of those pieces. You know, the second piece would just be long-term business development. And if we're not out getting in front of clients and prospective clients, how does that change, you know, how we're able to generate business going forward?
Well, people are working outside of the office, all right? You can still go and talk to prospective clients, right?
Oh, you certainly can. I mean, what's changed is, you know, it's harder to go out and grab a drink with somebody or grab a lunch with somebody. We did a lot of kind of face-to-face, one-on-one type networking that is, it's just more difficult now.
I'm sorry, did you say you drink? How can you make debits equal credits if you drink?
They equal a lot more easily.
You use the plugging effect. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Yeah. You celebrate, by the way, the founder. Do you know who the founder is of accounting?
Yeah. Luca Pacioli, right?
Yes. And do you know, you're in Cleveland, Ohio, but every year we go down to the AICPA headquarters and we actually have a parade for them. All right. And, you know, we go crazy. We eat a lot of pasta, you know, and it's really a nice affair. And we weren't able to do it last year because of the pandemic. And a student once called me after I said that, and they said, did you enjoy yourself at that parade you went to? I said, I wasn't serious. What are you talking about? There's no parade. These guys lived in the 1500s.
Yeah.
They're dead. Okay. No, actually, a lot of people don't even know who those people are. You think most people know, what's the name, Ravioli? What's his name? I'm sorry, Lucas?
Yeah, I think it was Luca Pacioli, I think.
Yes.
That's like a throwback to, I had a graduate school class with a guy named Gary Previtz at Case Western Reserve, and he literally wrote the book on the history of accounting.
Really?
So I do remember that.
Is there anything else that happened in accounting that was exciting? I mean... other than Luca. First of all, pronouncing the name in itself.
That is the seminal moment.
Yeah, yeah. Now, a lot of people don't know who that person is, but I'm telling you, these students called me up, and some of them called me before I went, and they asked me if there's any souvenirs I could bring back. So I said, yeah, no problem. I said, just send me checks.
Yeah.
Make it payable to cash.
Yeah.
All right. But anyway, now let's go and talk about what you do, okay? Obviously, you're guests. You do a lot of podcasts?
You know what? I actually don't. We do a ton of presentations, but not a lot of podcasts.
You're going to love this. You're gonna say, I want to be a guest on a podcast, all right? Now, will every person be like me? Probably not, but that could be good or bad.
Yeah.
anyway, let's talk about some of these things. I've been trying to get the executive director of the Society of Forensic Accounting, all right, to do this. And he said yes initially, but he says, you know, they want me to give them all the questions, all right, that I would be asking this person. And I said, wait a minute. I said, I don't have questions that I ask anybody, all right? So I still haven't gotten, I've spoken to this gentleman a few times. His name is Scott something or other, but I think people might want to know more about forensic accounting. And how much forensic accounting do you do?
So I would say I have pieces of my practice that touch in forensic accounting. And it's, you know, primarily in the divorce arena in that regard. But we have folks who spend all their time doing forensic accounting work. You know, it really is kind of a specialty in and of itself. And it's one, there's a lot of overlap in, you know, the economic damages and valuation work that I spend a lot of my time doing. But there are unique nuances really in each of those areas. And it's, you know, it's becoming more and more difficult to be an expert in all of them.
You know any juicy stories of forensic accounting with divorces, without mentioning names, of course?
I was going to say, I got plenty of stories. I don't know how many of them I can share.
Well, let's take out the four-letter words like cats and...
There's not much left after that.
I mean, are they that bad? I mean...
You get rid of those words.
Are you one of those guys that stand outside watching the ex-husband or something, or the potential ex-husband? How do forensic accountants get involved with divorces?
So it's really, I would tell you, on the forensic side and on, you know, valuation and litigation support in general, you know, the vast majority of our work, or at least a large portion, comes from attorneys. You know, usually there's some sort of legal problem and, you know, there's a financial component to it and they need an expert to assist. So in a divorce context, it typically relates to things like asset tracing and determining if a spouse has come into a marriage with assets or has inherited assets during the marriage. Those are typically separate from what would be divided between the two upon the divorce. So going back and really putting together the roadmap as to what was there at the date of marriage, you know, what does that look like today? What might have been inherited to be able to carve out that piece that is not divisible with the future former spouse?
How things are divided also depend upon whether it's community property state, right?
Exactly. The state law is going to be really important there. And, you know, you get 50 states, you get 50 really different sets of interpretations. So it does become unique. And there are some broader contexts. And you mentioned, you know, community property. You know, there are some commonalities across states, but each state is still very specific. And especially in you know, the family law courts, where there's a lot more discretion for the judges and the decisions that they render than you may have in other courts.
And do you hear my voice go? Now, you had to take an exam, obviously, right? And I've heard to be a forensic accountant, first you have to be a certified public accountant. Is that correct?
So it depends on the sort of certification you're looking for. So, you know, the AICPA has their own forensic accounting designation, the CFF, Certified in Financial Forensics. There are also valuation credentials, which are some of the ones that I've been able to pick up along the way, like the ABV, which is the AICPA's credential, or the CVA or the ASA. You know, there's a variety there as well.
There's so many certifications, you know, it's unbelievable.
Alphabet soup.
Yeah, how did you find time to take all these certifications?
It was earlier on in my career, and you know, it was before, I think I got most of them before I got married and had kids and all that. And yeah, you know, I was still
kids, those kids. You, if you didn't have those kids, you probably have 12 more certifications.
Yeah, right? I'd be so bored though. So it's chasing those guys around. That's the fun part, coaching them and all that good stuff.
Now, I want you to think about this before you answer. All right. Which do you like more, the certifications or the kids?
The kids.
Okay, good. You're a family man then.
Yeah.
All right.
Hey, the certifications are there to help the kids. That's what it all comes back to.
Yeah, that's right. You're putting away the money for their college?
I'm trying.
Notre Dame, right?
We'll see. I want them to cheer for them. I don't want them to have any expectations. It's a crapshoot.
It's tough. Is there an accounting program? They have an accounting program in Notre Dame, right?
Yes. Yep.
And it's very difficult to get through, or?
No, it's more so just the luck of getting in. I mean, the accounting program is fantastic. When I left, I want to say within 2 or 3 years, I think they had gotten to the number one program in the nation for their undergraduate accounting program, for whatever that means. I mean, you can go to accounting, still accounting, wherever you go. Obviously, I'm biased. I love my experience there. But just, you know, they've got so many high quality applicants. That, you know, how do you choose? You get so many people with these scores on these tests, and you know, why is one person, you know, true, you know, better, quote unquote, than the next? I think a lot of it's just it's luck at the end of the day.
Thank you so much for listening to Jaeger CPA Review and More. As a token for our appreciation for your listenership, we'd like to offer you 10% off your next purchase with Jaeger CPA Review. Save between $50 to $150 with code PODCAST10. If you'd like more information, look us up on JaegerCPAReview.com. And as always, if you've enjoyed this show, please rate and review on iTunes or your preferred listening platform. Again, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to you tuning in next time.